Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us Melissa Madian, founder and chief fabulous officer at TMM Enablement Services Incorporated and author of the bestseller, Enabler, I Hardly Know Her, How to Make the Sales Experience Not Suck.
The first chapter is all about what the heck is sales enablement all about? What is it? Everyone's talking about it. What does it mean? Why should people care? Why should people even think about it if they are in a sales or a sales manager role or even a chief revenue officer? They've heard about this sales enablement thing and they have no idea. Is this the passing phase? What is it? So the first chapter really details out what the heck is this thing and why should people care? And it kind of, you know, if you're thinking about these things, then sales enablement probably makes sense for your organization.
Melissa Madian is the founder and chief fabulous officer at TMM Enablement Services Incorporated. She was one of the first people to pioneer the sales enablement role and has spent the past 25 years perfecting the sales experience for revenue generating teams. She is the author of Enabler, I Hardly Know Her, How to Make the Sales Experience Not Suck. Melissa was also one of the LinkedIn's 15 top sales influencers to follow in 2020 and ranked 10th in the 35+ most influential women leading B2B marketing technology. Now, on to this fun discussion about Enabler, I Hardly Know Her with Melissa Madian. Melissa, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm delighted to have you back so soon after our last discussion. Thank you for making time.
It's great to be back. It's great to be back. Thank you.
We are talking about your book, Enabler, I Hardly Know Her, How Do I Make the Sales Experience? The first question is, there is no dearth of sales books, right? We literally produce a couple of hundred books every year.
Yep.
What made you decide to do this one?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been thinking about writing a book for a while, and I write a lot of content on LinkedIn, articles, blog posts and stuff. And then I thought, you know, I was out for drinks probably about I guess it'd be 2 years ago now with a friend of mine. And he said, you know, you really should write a sales enablement book for dummies. That's basically what he said. You should write a sales enablement book for dummies because a lot of people don't know what sales enablement is, how it relates to them, what is the sales experience. So that's always been rattling around in the back of my brain. And when I had started writing, but then when the pandemic hit and I had suddenly all of this time on my hands, I thought, you know what, I'm gonna write it now. that's what I'm gonna do. And so it's basically a sales enablement book for dummies.
Did you feel that there was not enough information out there for people to understand what sales enablement is? Did you feel that despite the internet, despite, you know, someone like you writing about it, the Sales Enablement Society putting out a lot of content out there and so on, it actually was necessary to put it together in a format? What made you think that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question because there are lots of books out there about sales enablement. There's lots of content that's out there from the various different sales enablement groups. For me, it was a combination of hearing from some folks saying, you know, there's lots of sales enablement materials out there, but it's complicated. It just sort of assumes that you know what enablement is and you know what the sales experience is all about. And I kind of took it from the angle of, I just want to write a good book. I've always been a writer. I've been a writer since I was a kid. So I just wanted to write a good, entertaining, you know, pour a glass of wine and consume it kind of book that just happened to talk about the importance of a really great sales experience. And actually, the book itself isn't specific to just sales enablement. It also talks about just how you create a really great experience for your buyers across the entire customer journey. So it talks a little bit about revenue enablement and enabling customer experience. So for me, it was like, I just wanted to take a different lens. It's not a highly analytical book. It's not a really in-depth analysis on research. It's just a, you know, it's like a nice snack. It's a snacking book. It's you know, if you just want to learn a little bit about what a sales enablement is and how to make a great sales experience, and you want to have a good time and laugh a little bit, that's what the book's all about.
That makes complete sense to me, because we see this entire category of micro learning, right? Which is about snackable bits of learning. And mm-hmm. I can pretty much see your thought. People say that nobody watches a video which is more than 2 minutes long and so on.
Right.
They're not absolutely right, but I totally get it that when you talk of a book's format or the inspiration being snackable, that I mm-hmm. think is very sort of communicative. I think that sort of straight away takes you to what you're trying to do. Wonderful. Yeah. So this friend of yours said, write a book, and you wanted to write a book. So you decided, pandemic, I'm not going out. I'm, you know, saving 4 hours a day from traveling. So mm-hmm. let me get going on the book. What happened next?
So then I put together a structure. So mm-hmm. first, even before the structure, I thought, what do I want to talk about in this book? What do I want this book to be? Do I want it to be a story? Do I want it to be more of an in-depth analysis of what sales experience and what sales enablement is? What do I want this book to be? What do I want people to take away from this book? And once I had established that, I said, all right, if I want this book to be just a funny look at sales and enablement and a combination of my experiences in the industry, because I've been in it for so long, and but also a bit informative, then how do I want to structure it? How do I want the flow to be for the person reading it? Where do I want to start? What steps do I want to take along the way? And then where do I ultimately want them to end so they feel like they've consumed a useful story throughout the book? And so once I had sort of laid out those key points, then I just sat down and started writing. So, as you know, first day, I said, all right, I'm going to focus in on what is sales enablement. Then I'm going to write that chapter. And then once I'm done that, then I'm going to get to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. So like every day I would write a little bit. I would try. My goal was try and write a chapter every day. That didn't always work because, you know, life gets in the way. But setting that goal for myself, just sitting down, and some days just the writing wouldn't come, and some days the writing would flow like crazy. So just by doing that, I was able to piece the whole thing together. And then there's a lot of revision work and then adding, you know, I found it surprising how many words go into a book. So once I had finished writing everything, it was like, oh, this isn't big enough. I need to write more. And so pulling things, oh, I probably should write about this. I should probably write about this. I had my husband, who's a writer and a screenwriter, I had him read it. And he's not familiar with the industry at all. So he said, you know, hey, you could elaborate more on this topic. You could elaborate more on this. I found this really interesting, but you didn't talk about it enough. So then I went through and did many more revisions until I finally had a book I was happy with.
Wonderful. So were you, apart from your husband reading it, was there anybody else you were sending this to for reading it and giving you feedback?
Yep, I had a couple of folks who are in the industry read it just to see how they liked it. I had a professional editor read it, so somebody who professionally edits books for a living, fictional books for a living. Had her read it and provide her spin on it too. Because my positioning was, I tried to give it to as many people who are not in the industry as possible to provide my feedback, because that's the feeling I wanted for the book. I wanted anyone who just wanted to read, learn a little something, and just have a good time, I wanted them to experience that. So I tried to give it to, I gave it to a couple folks who are in the industry, but mostly I tried to give it to folks who had no idea what the industry was all about and just was interested in reading a good book.
Right. So when you did the first draft and you said it's not enough, how many words had you written?
I think I had written like 25,000 or something like that. Okay. Like not a lot. And I was like, ooh, I need a lot more than this, because this is barely 50 pages or so.
Right.
I had to go back. And my husband actually was very helpful, because he's like, here are places, because, you know, when you write it, I know all the material. So to me, it's like, well, this just makes sense. When someone who doesn't know anything about the topic reads it, he's like, well, you could have elaborated a lot more on this. This was interesting. This topic, say, kickoffs. Kickoffs was really interesting, and you sort of stopped short. Elaborate on that more. So once I had that kind of lens on it, it was a lot easier to realize, oh, I could make this, you know, 40,000 words instead of 20,000 words.
So how much did it end up being at the end?
I think it ended up being about 35,000 words. Yeah.
Okay. How much of your existing blogs and written articles did you draw upon while you were structuring and writing the book?
Yeah, I'd say like there's a good maybe 20% is stuff that I had written on in the past and realized, oh, I wrote this really good article. I'll just pull from that and modify it and put it into the book. So yeah, like 15-20% is pulled from. And a lot of the stuff that I publish now, I'll take excerpts of the book and put it out there just to give little even more snackable bites for folks to enjoy if they don't want to buy the whole book.
Right. So obviously being funny or entertaining was part of your agenda from the beginning. So tell us about the first chapter.
The first chapter is all about what the heck is sales and ailment all about? What is it? Everyone's talking about it. What does it mean? Why should people care? Why should people even think about it if they are in a sales or a sales manager role? Or even a chief revenue officer, they've heard about this sales enablement thing and they have no idea, is this the passing phase? What is it? So the first chapter really details out what the heck is this thing and why should people care? And it kind of, you know, if you're thinking about these things, then sales enablement probably makes sense for your organization.
So let's dig a bit on this one. What is sales enablement and why people should care?
Yeah. The definition, and it's funny because even in the book, I start with one definition and then I modify it as I go through each of the stages, because that was my journey. I started in one spot thinking about sales enablement, and then I got to a different spot. So ultimately, the goal of sales enablement is to provide the revenue generating functions with the process, tools, and training that they need in order to close a lot of business, close it quickly, but also create a great customer experience. And my original definition was just sales, to help the sales functions do that. But creating customers is important, but growing and keeping them is also very important. So by the time I get to the end of the book, I talk about how it's not just sales enablement, it's actually revenue enablement. Anyone who is interacting with the customer for the purpose of creating, keeping, or growing them should have some element of enablement so that they can do their jobs better.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I think we are over occupied with the thought of selling and not focusing on revenue. So that's typically the difference between short and long term thinking. And we all understand that short term is in vogue, but it's not going to help us in the long term.
Exactly.
You move on to answer a question, which you say, what am I selling? What is it that people need to understand about what they're selling?
Yeah. So quite often, organizations will give their sellers, you know, the product sheets. Here's the data sheet. Here's the product you're selling. Here are all the SKUs, for those of you who are old school like myself and remember what SKUs are. And the challenge with that is, and the analogy I use in the book is, it's like you have a truck of produce and you're basically telling the sellers, today on the truck we have oranges, or today on the truck we have apples, today on the truck we have strawberries. But it there, and that's the thing that it is, but there's nothing, a lot of organizations don't talk about, well, what do those oranges and those apples and those strawberries mean to the people buying them? And what is it going to solve for them? So when I go through the what am I selling book, part of the book, it's not the orange. It's what you're selling is, hey, customer, do you realize that a vitamin C deficiency could result in scurvy? And that's essentially what you're selling. It's you're selling a healthier lifestyle and vitamin C intake so that your buyer doesn't get scurvy. So I detail, you know, in the book about how organizations need to think about not the bits that are on the truck, not the produce that's on the truck, but what does that produce bring to the buyers that you're targeting?
Yeah, so features versus benefits is what we are talking about.
Exactly.
It's time for a short break. I asked Melissa about this chapter in the book on who do we serve. This is one of the hardest problems to solve, leading to very low conversions and thousands of hours of wasted efforts. I asked, how do you figure who you are actually selling to? As we come back, we will have Melissa explaining how she views the problem. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink is a new generation remote selling tool that takes out friction in the communication and conversation process between the seller and the buyer, making it easy to focus on the problem both are trying to solve. Over 400 companies in 32 countries use PitchLink to buy and sell better. Check out the platform for free at https://pitch.link. Back to our guest today. As we went into the break, I asked Melissa, how do you find out who the actual buyers are? Melissa has a very interesting yet obvious take on this. Let's listen in. You go on to elaborate on identifying your buyer, which is, you write a chapter called Who Do I Serve? How do you advise in your chapter, yeah, how to figure out who you're serving?
Yeah, I talk about you need to really understand who cares about the problem that you solve for. Who in the organization that you're targeting, or the type of business that you're targeting, or the departments that you're targeting, who cares? Who cares about this problem, and who has the problems and doesn't necessarily know that they have these problems that you need to talk to? One of the things that I talk about in the book is this idea of personas, but I'm actually not anti-persona, but I'm not a fan of creating personas for the sake of trying to identify people versus the problems that they're solving. Like you have a problem, a business problem that you solve for, and multiple people could potentially care about that problem. So there needs to be a balance of what are the business challenges that you're solving for, and just who in the organization cares about these things. And then I just go through a few examples on how organizations that I worked at, how we solve for those problems successfully, or solve for that challenge of who am I serving successfully, in order to market to them in a way that was easily scalable, so that we weren't building, you know, 10-page persona sheets for every single possible persona that could be out there.
It's interesting because a lot of times when I'm doing webinars or I'm talking, I tell people, don't forget you're selling to a person and not to a persona.
Yep.
But I want to dig a little bit more on this one. especially because you do mention that you have shared examples from your past experience. How do you find out whom you're serving?
Yeah, the thing that I've done at previous companies and what I always recommend to my current clients is take a look at your customers. Take a look at your current customer base and see how are they getting value out of the product or the solution that, that you are providing to them. What challenges are being solved for them? What do they look like? What kind of roles do they have? Is there a consistency across your customers on the type of folks that are interested in solving this problem? And once you take a look at that, because most organizations now have SFA tools or CRM systems that are tracking or usage data that's tracking this stuff. It's not that hard to actually take a look at the data and see, is there some sort of pattern of user behavior that you can then extrapolate and determine, oh, this is the type of person, this is the type of role that's getting a lot of value out of our solution. Let's actually spend a lot of time and focus on developing out our messaging for that role.
Would you like to recount any example from your book that you would have written about?
Sure. So back when I was at a company called Eloqua, a marketing automation software company that has since been purchased by Oracle, we did just that. We actually took a look at all of our usage data and said, okay, we're right now at the time we're selling very evangelically. Let's sell the big vision of marketing automation and how people can benefit. And competitors were coming in. And so what we said was, okay, instead of this evangelical sale, let's actually take a look at the data and see, why do people buy us? Why do people use us? What are the reasons, the business challenges that we're solving for? And as an organization, when we took a look at that data, we were able to distill it down to about 6 use cases why people bought from us. And as a collective organization, our marketing, our sales, our customer success organization started to just focus in, instead of selling evangelically and selling the big vision, we started to focus in on these use cases depending upon who we were talking to. And that had a huge impact on how we competitively went to market.
Absolutely. And Eloqua was a great company. It literally kickstarted the marketing automation industry. So great to know that you were there as part of their journey. How long were you there?
Oh, yeah.
Were you there till the time of takeover?
I was employee 43 and stayed right through to acquisition and about a year and a half after acquisition.
Wow. So that's another story, another session we have to do. Okay.
Yeah, it was a fun ride. I will tell, and great people, hands down, one of the best group of individuals, executives that I've ever worked with, and many of whom are still good friends today, which is a testament to, because this is many, many years later, a testament to the quality of the culture of the organization.
Right. Let's move to this chapter about how do we solve this problem called SDR. How do we solve this?
Yeah. I think you and I talked a little bit about this in the previous chat, but my cut at it is there seems to be this sort of cookie cutter of, I'm a software as a service organization, I need to have SDRs as part of my go-to-market strategy. The challenge is the persona of the SDR is hire a bunch of kids out of college, train them really quickly, and get them on the phones really quickly. And depending upon who you are trying to get interested in your product or service, that may not necessarily work because a lot of these kids have never done this before. So it's almost like a volume game versus a quality game. So, and then there's also on the SDR side, they're young kids right out of college. So they want to, there's this perception of I have to climb the corporate ladder really quickly and become a sales rep really quickly. So they're asking for raises and promotions 6 months into their tenure when they haven't really learned anything. So there's this weird, the entire function of the SDR is so interesting because back when I was selling, which is, 30 some years ago, I was my own SDR. I was a sales rep and my own SDR, and I had to go through the process of generating my own leads and selling to them and then closing the deal. And that doesn't exist anymore, really, in SaaS. So I sort of challenge the audience to think about, are you putting in an SDR organization just because that's what everybody else is doing? Or how are you thinking about your audience? And again, it goes back to the experience that your buyer has with you. Are you putting your buyer through a negative experience by having some kid who's never talked to a chief revenue officer, a chief marketing officer, a chief financial officer before, just to open the door to them and then just hand it off, which doesn't create a really great experience for your audience? So I challenge folks to think a little bit differently about the SDR role.
What do you think should be the role? Should it exist or should it morph?
I think it depends on the type of sale you have. It depends on the organization. It depends on the type of experience you want your buyer to have with you. I think it depends on, is it a volume, a numbers game for your selling? Is it more transactional, or is it a account based, you know, trying to build a relationship kind of thing? My cut at it is, it shouldn't just be, hey, I'm starting up a sales organization and I need an SDR team, because that's the way it's always been done. Just because that's the way it's always been done doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the right way for your organization. So I'm going to give you the typical consultant answer, which is it depends.
Okay, so let me dig a little more. quickly. Obviously, putting a young person to talk to a senior, I mean, if the decision-making or the target group is a senior professional, I think that's disastrous. It's not going to yield anything. So obviously you can use SDRs for certain type of products where they're talking to sort of quote unquote equals. But if it is not, who should be actually opening the door? Is it the AE or the sales rep himself, or still there is, for example, a lot of this is today done by inside sales teams, right? Who are not typical SDRs. Some of them are capable of actually closing the deal, right?
Yeah.
So what, according to you, should be the kind of people who should be selling to the senior or slightly more matured buyer?
Yeah, I think you need, again, I'm going to give you, it depends. If your target market are senior level folks who have been around the block for a while, having, just like you said, having a young kid who's fresh out of college, who's reading from a script, try and open those doors is not going to be effective. And it's not going to be effective because, again, I always tell people, think about the buyer. What are they going through? As a CFO, do I really want some kid calling me with a script? Doesn't matter the kind, you could have the best training for that kid. It's not going to resonate, and it's not going to make the kid feel good.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, if this is a new, fresh out of college, he or she is thinking, is this sales? This is terrible. Like, this is not the way I want to live my life. And that dissuades people from going into sales. So it should be almost a like for like. So if you've got, you know, senior level folks, have your senior AEs and just have your AEs focus in on a certain set of accounts, like really quality accounts where they can have that interaction with the C-level person. And then you're creating a good experience for your buyer, and then it's more likely to move along through the pipeline faster.
Right. I'll go to the penultimate chapter where you talk about nobody cares about you. And, you know, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I can sort of guess what this is about. I'm curious, why is it so late into the book and not sort of the opening? Because that seems like an idea which would have set the tone for the book and for sales enablement.
Yeah. So the nobody cares about you part of the book, it's later on because it sort of follows my evolution of how I got to the sales experience and the customer experience being so important. So that part of the book talks about how so much of my selling experience was, you talk about the product, the solution, and how, you know, we're going to solve all your problems. And really fundamentally, I started to realize nobody cares. Nobody cares about me. Nobody cares about the solution I have. It's not about me. It's actually about the audience. It's about the buyer that is buying from me. And so I got to that a little later in my career. And now I tell clients almost right out of the gate, nobody cares about you. Figure out what this means to your buyer and what's in it for them. So that's the reasoning. And that's what I talk about in the chapter, how it took me a while to get to the point where it's actually not about me. It's about the person on the other end of the phone, the other end of the Zoom meeting, and them wanting to buy from you.
Tell me, what are the takeaways that you believe people will have when they read the book?
Yeah. So if I were to say a main takeaway, first, I want folks to have fun while reading it. So that's hands down. I want people to just have a really fun, enjoyable experience. I want them to laugh out loud. I want them to like relax when they're reading the book and not feel like it's a chore to read it. It's not a quote unquote business book. It's just a fun book about sales and selling. The main thing I want folks to take away is selling is a profession, and it's a profession like engineering is a profession. But people, the businesses, the industry still isn't quite there yet in thinking about sales as a profession. So I want folks to take away that it actually is a profession, and there are some key things that you have to put into place in an organization. Whether you have a sales enablement function or not, there are key things you have to put into place in order to get your organization thinking about revenue generation as a profession and not just a job. But having some fun along the way while you're doing it.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Melissa, thank you so much for making time. I really enjoyed chatting, and I'm sure, see, the idea is that people who will be reading this book should get more out of this interview when they read the book and after they read the book. So I think we have
Perfect.
Done a reasonable job for
don't forget,
getting them.
Buy my book. Shameless plug for the book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Thank you so much for making time, and we'll talk again soon.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books with Brad Jevons, Peter Kohan, Park Howell, Shakti Likha, and Julie Hansen about wonderful books that they have written. We also have a lineup of Listener's Choice episodes featuring Thomas Williams and more. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.